our final Buddhism podcast. I'm Radha.
And I'm Ashley.
And we'll be interviewing Lynn Newdom from the Dzogchen Center.
She's been practicing Buddhism for over 50 years, so we spoke with her to gain perspective on how this philosophy informs her practice and daily life.
So our first question is just like a little bit of background, how you found your practice, what led you here?
I come from Ohio, very conservative area, Christian family, and didn't really know anything about religions outside of mine. But when I went to college, I started being interested in something more than the regular routine of getting good grades and then stopping study and then this cycle of always having to achieve and then and rest and doing it again and again and again. So I felt like groundless in a sense. The religion department at my school, University of Michigan, did a course called Dimensions of Religious Experience. And that just opened up different practices, different views. One of those people from the center did a presentation on the Wheel of Life. And that's really what the point of this practice was not to do something that I thought was spiritual or, you know, get high on meditation, but that it was coming right down to earth and looking at my mind and practicing at the same time. I learned that what I was doing, that meditation, was Buddha Dharma, and there were people practicing that. And at that point, I felt like I'd reached home for the first time in my life. And that's what I've done for almost 50 years in different ways. And I'm very grateful to have an entire adult life that was based on this guidance.
As we mentioned, we've mainly focused on Yogacara and Matyamaka. Mm-hmm. So I'd be interested in hearing what your take on Dzogchen theory is.
Well, sometimes I look at it as historical development of the early teachings of the Buddha, what people were able to realize at that time as schools developed and as practitioners deepened their knowledge. They started noticing that there wasn't anything exactly existent. I mean, these meditators of long ago were quite incredible that they could actually notice the dharmas occurring 60 times a second. There are all those little pieces. It can be broken down into parts. And then finally, you look at all these flickerings at your mind and there's nothing solid and permanent there. But I think we can acknowledge that that emptiness isn't nothingness or blankness or voidness. The way I studied these was to recognize that we can go beyond positing emptiness as a thing and more that the universe is full of energy and sights and sounds and all these.
We read about Chandrakirti a lot and him criticizing Yogacara and his arguments about the mind being empty. I'm just curious about your opinion on if the mind is empty.
We have our Western conceptual ideas of what mind and our scientific ideas of mind and everything being up here. And all of the Tibetan and the Sanskrit, many, many different words, lo, tu, chitta, manas, are all translated as mind. And we have one idea for that. So if we are aware of the different components of our mind, like if you are aware of all those different, the 51 different mental states, then you see them as mental states rather than me. You have the potential of not always thinking your thoughts are you. In general, I accept that all of those observations about the mind, I mean, that's what I think these different schools are observations. are true and they don't have to be contradictory. I mean, it's fabulous to do that study because it takes you right out of any preconceptions. What do you mean I don't exist? What do you mean mind is empty? You know, really makes you challenge really firmly held beliefs in who you are and what this world is. And then practice is a chance to let go. It's not conceptual. So these views, great. You're never going to think yourself to enlightenment. It is said, even the tongue of the Buddha could not explain this. So there are many helpful teachings, but ultimately, it's not locked within what we can conceive. Sometimes at the beginning of the path, it may be opening up a trauma you've had. And it might be opening up in meditation to not having thoughts, or walking outdoors as meditation. But it's more direct. So it's that fullness of relating directly with energies and emotions and people. So we're not going to just sit and be quiet. You allow an experience and don't either squash it or act out on it. Having the healthy feeling within the practice. So I think with Yogacara, it's going beyond emptiness in saying emptiness isn't void, it's full. It's full of energy. My journey as being a Buddhist has been more than studying and understanding things. Mm. Has taken me to places I wished I really wouldn't have had to go. Have taken me into dark places. Because you open up to yourself and you see things you don't like in yourself. And you relax with those and you learn to make friends with those.
You know, you said that you think that all of these different schools of thought are mostly observations and shouldn't be contradictory?
Yeah. I see those teachings not as this, you know, separate schools, but as further developments. And some did go off in different ways. And some are, you know, the Theravadins will say the Tibetans polluted Buddha Dharma. There is a lot of separateness in some of the schools. And so one reason the Tibetan study is so good is because it utilizes all of the different schools rather than fighting among them and saying this is right and this is right. You know, it's like seeing how Yogacara and Majjhimaka aren't necessarily oppositional rather than taking a view. I just come back to we're all different people, we have different experience, and the experience that can open us up, we accept and not push that on somebody else.
Something I was interested in, how you fit in the teachings that you have with living in a Western world that is largely individualistic and materialistic.
I guess the practice is that it always comes back to yourself, and there are people of different, all kinds of different persuasions, and learning to trust myself and also respecting others, that this path may be perfect for me, but it's not perfect for other people, and something else entirely may be what someone else goes by. Now, I should also add that it's not that I have been supported by a community, that yeah, we're in this Western materialistic society, but I've always had Sangha around me.
I guess something we'd also wondered is how the center fits into the wider community of the Pioneer Valley. And
this is part of a global community that has centers all over the world in all countries, you know, Russia, Europe, a lot in South America. So we're not a local community so much as a group that's located in the Pioneer Valley.
What kind of people attend? Is it long time returners or?
A lot of people here have been a long time. We're at a particular difficult point because the teachings that we follow depend on a master, a meditation master, introducing one to the nature of mind. It's kind of like the third turning and somebody shows you the aliveness of your mind. And these traditions work with that introduction. Our teacher is not alive. No one's giving introductions now. And so it's quite a challenge to know, how can we continue? At the same time, there's this question of, well, that's a system that was developed in Tibet, where male monastic communities wrote things down and propagated it for all this time. And not that women can't practice, although Theravada will teach that the best a woman can do is hope to get a male body next time so they can attain enlightenment. I visited Borobudur, magnificent Mandalam monument, and there was a woman from Thailand or something. She was sitting out there just crying because you see male and female Buddhas, and she had always been told that she couldn't attain enlightenment in her female body. And she was sobbing because she saw that here it was expressed. I have a feeling that we're at a crux of time where that established male monastic way of passing down the teachers and the teachings through those teachers is broken. Mm-hmm. And what I feel and hope is that women are part of the picture now. As a woman, I feel things differently. I may say things differently. I don't teach using the words straight the Tibetan, and some people say you have to do it exactly like this, but I think all of us are open to men and women teaching equally. Mm. But the fact is that for thousands of years it's come down mostly on one stream.
Do you think that with that there would be different teachings or different sutras that you as a woman look at differently, knowing that it was written by males?
Well, for example, I think childbearing and child raising would be part of how of your practice, rather than something that you went away from and were set was celibate. That, yeah, I think there's a lot of aspects of life that we have as women that we'd integrate into these teachings.
I often think about that aspect of Buddhism, especially when I'm on my period. Like, we talk about suffering so much in Buddhism, but barely ever do we talk about like the specific to women suffering. It's not in the text, which is interesting,
right?
Because mm-hmm. it's a huge part of life.
Yes, and what we're reading about is monastic men's interpretation of something as it's gone along.
Yeah,
you're right, it's missing all of that. And yes, it's time for that to be part of the teachings and to speak. Personally, I feel that I go more intuitively than scholastically. Also, being a violinist and musician, I'm really creative with what I teach, so I never teach the subjects as they're supposed to be taught as a Santi Mahasanga teacher that I am.
In thinking about the mind, how do you see these influences of attraction and aversion leading to suffering in your own life, and how do you use your practice to counteract that?
It's like riding a roller coaster. You know that you're going to have pleasant and unpleasant experiences, and you accept them both. Attraction and aversion is when we take our basic experience and we either like it or we don't like it or we ignore it. The next step is either grabbing it, really ignoring it, or trying to get rid of it. You don't have to go onto that stage. You can actually feel those feelings without saying, oh, I shouldn't feel like this. So not being governed by attraction and aversion, knowing that we're doing it every second of the time. We start working with this in meditation, where we have those pleasant or unpleasant sensations, thoughts, feelings come up. And the basic instructions on that are to let it go as just thoughts. Then perhaps when you're in traffic and getting really irritated at someone stopping you or something, maybe you can just let that feeling go, that it starts making your life a little more fluent and easy. And I think that's how working with attraction and aversion in our life helps for more happiness. It's not being happy or mad, it's accepting those flows.
With that, my question was, have you felt as if your views have changed?
Well, I would, it's not just a view, but it's an evolution of experience. Before I started, I thought, wow, we're going to have these spiritual highs and it's going to be so great. And then, boom. It's about my own emotions. I don't want to go there. And then you sit with that. And it's, the way I would describe it is that the view is how you come down and explain your experience in conceptual language. But really, ultimately, we're talking about something that goes beyond language. I'm very grateful to have been practicing this whole time because it means the traumas, the joys, the suffering in my life, I've brought to the path in a way of evolving myself rather than get stuck in any one thing. I think I would end by saying that for me, I don't say Buddhism, I say Buddha Dharma. Ism is like a thing. Buddha Dharma has been an approach to everything that's happened in my life rather than something separate that I've studied. It's really a personal evolution.
We'd like to offer a special thank you to all who made this podcast possible, including Lynn, the Docheng Center, Professor Jay Garfield, and our classmates.